could join us. I'd like to ask you, what do you think of Proposition I-732 in Washington, the carbon tax swap?
Well, I think that it's, I don't know an immense amount about it, but I know that the local chapter of 350 in Washington decided not to endorse it. And the reason that they gave was that there wasn't the full consultation with communities of color in the drafting of it. And I guess I think that the moment when the environmental movement was mostly white and didn't pay attention to frontline communities is probably it's probably a good thing that we're trying very hard to get past it now.
People of color are in a desperate fight for survival against white supremacy in our society and institutions like our police departments. So let me bring that up. What's the relation of 350.org to the fight against racial marginalization?
Well, we've been, the people at 350 have worked pretty closely with Black Lives Matter across the country, and it goes in both directions. You know, it was really good to see the Black Lives Matter charter this year calling for fossil fuel divestment. People have a sense that these, you know, some people think that these are all just kind of unconnected ideas, but in fact, marginalization is something that crosses the spectrum. I mean, the same people who have to worry about what happens if they get pulled over by the police are oftentimes, very oftentimes, the same people living in the communities who have to worry about the air they breathe because they're downwind of whatever it's bad to be downwind of.
So you have an intersectional attitude, a solidarity attitude.
Yeah.
Democracy Now! Has been covering the Standing Rock, has been covering the Standing Rock North Dakota Access Pipeline protest, and you have been involved as well. How important is that fight?
I've been doing what I can from a distance to support it because I think it's the most important fossil fuel fight in the country, but in some ways the most important justice fight in the country that that there is. You know, what's happening up there on the High Plains and the Dakotas is a really dramatic moment. And I think there's several things that about it are important. One is that Indian nations by the hundreds are coming together in a show of unity that we've never seen on this continent before. The second is that the wisdom of those most ancient traditions on this continent, the only people who successfully inhabited it over the long term, are combining with the latest wisdom from climate scientists. They're pointing us in the same direction. And I guess the third thing is, and the saddest thing is, that as usually happens, all that wisdom is being met by just full-on repression. The pictures of police dogs sicked on peaceful protesters there, or security guard dogs, I mean, those pictures could have come out of Birmingham in 1963, except that instead of African Americans this time, it was Native Americans.
350 PDX convened the Portland Shell No Coalition that led to thousands of participants joining the Shell No actions to oppose and draw attention to Shell's Arctic drilling. The Kai activists and Greenpeace bridge hangers delayed a Shell Arctic icebreaker ship for nearly 2 days. It was a heck of a visual impact. The photos went viral worldwide. Following the action, Shell Oil pulled out of the Arctic. President Obama announced an end to leasing the Arctic for drilling for 2 years. Are further such actions in the planning stages by 350.org?
Well, first of all credit to wonderful activists from 350 and Greenpeace and everybody else out there in Portland and in Seattle, too. The birth of Kai activism, at least on this continent, was a really wonderful thing to get to witness from a distance. And you should know that, you know, it's not just here. One of the most exciting actions of the last couple of years were, I guess you couldn't quite call them Kai activists, but down across the low-lying Pacific Islands that are going to disappear in this century if we don't get our act together. You know, activists from all those islands, from 350 in the Pacific, built on each island a traditional canoe, these are big seagoing canoes, and they took them off to the biggest coal port in the world, which is Newcastle, Australia, and they used them there to blockade that biggest warships on the planet for a day with those canoes, and it was amazing, and it had much the same galvanizing effect. It wasn't long afterwards when plans were effectively shelved for what would have been the world's largest coal mine there in Queensland in Australia. So it's a tactic, we're pretty good on land, we're pretty good at sea. I don't know whether, I guess we'll have to explore aerial activity next.
An article in mybroadband.co.za is saying that South Africa is looking at major energy expenditures, and they are considering knocking a planned nuclear plant off the table because solar and wind bids are coming in at 40 or 50% less than a nuke per kilowatt hour, and that also puts renewable at a similar advantage to coal. Meanwhile, the Japanese government is so afraid of news getting out about Fukushima and the contamination of that area and Tokyo that they have passed a secrecy law. What does this portend for the nuclear industry?
I think that the numbers about renewable energy are just astonishing. I mean, this is probably the most important economic fact on the planet, is that in the last 8 years, the price of a solar panel has dropped 80%. That's amazing. And it undercuts the fossil fuel industry, it undercuts the nuclear industry, it undercuts everybody who's not figuring out how to take advantage of the sun and the wind. And that's not, I'm glad you mentioned Africa, because it's not just these sort of plans for big grid power that are being disrupted. It's the ways that people get energy in their daily lives. I've just been up in Humboldt in Northern California, where the energy lab there is at the forefront of helping figure out how to bring solar energy in particular to non-connected parts of Africa, which is most of the continent, where people still burn kerosene and inhale the particulates. And the strides that are being made are really astonishing in the ability to get this stuff out and fast. So, I spend much of my time being pessimistic because the climate science is very pessimistic. But the rapid fall in the price of renewable energy gives us, if we wanted to, the possibility of having some hope of dealing with climate change. Whether we'll muster the political will is a different question, but if we didn't have the technology, the political will wouldn't do us much good. At least we know what we could be doing instead of what we have been doing.
Bill McKibben, are you opposed to nuclear poison power?
To nuclear what?
Poison power.
I don't think it's going to play much of a role at all in where we're going in the future. I think the only places that are going to build them in serious numbers, and even there, unlikely, are authoritarian countries where you can push them through. I don't think anyone's going to build them here. And I think, along with the issues that you raise around their safety, probably the biggest reason they won't get built is their cost. You might as well burn $20 bills to generate electricity. The cost curve for building a nuclear power plant just keeps going up and up and up, while the price of sun and wind just keeps coming down and down and down.
It certainly seems to be the case. 30 years ago, I was involved in an effort to expose and protest the U.S. proxy war in Central America, and I was involved in anti-apartheid efforts and received surveillance and threats from government-affiliated thugs. Now I hear that you are experiencing the same sort of thing. What's happening, and how do you intend to deal with it?
Well, I don't. It's not exactly government. Well, I mean, who knows how all that works? But government affiliated. It's more. These guys were quite out in the open. It was a group called America Rising, a big right wing political action committee run by people who run presidential campaigns for, you know, Romney, and so on in the past, and they said that they were going to subject me to a level of what they said opposition research that and video tracking that normally they had only reserved for presidential candidates they didn't like. And so indeed, often when I'm out in public or kind of semi-public, there are people, you know, with video cameras photographing everything I do, and they're doing all kinds of opposition research on my personal life and that kind of thing. I don't really know what to do about it except persevere. People say one should treat it as with a certain amount of as a certain kind of flattery. I guess it's a sign that we're costing them enough money to make it worth their while, things like the fight around the Keystone Pipeline. But, I got to say, I don't enjoy it one bit. It's hard to just sort of shrug it off and continue on.
Well, then I'd like to personally thank you for your perseverance. Democracy Now! Reported Tuesday that a new study by the United Nations has found climate change could drive 122 million more people into extreme poverty in the next 15 years, in part due to the impact it is already having on small-scale farmers. Could you comment on that?
Yeah. I mean, look, we see it every damn day around the world. I mean, today, while everybody was, glued to the debate last night, another typhoon, Haima, was crashing into the Philippines, into Luzon. It followed the same track that a typhoon had followed the week before. So that one had dropped 20 inches of rain, and this one dropped another 10 inches of rain. You can imagine the landslides and craziness that resulted, and you can imagine how impossible it is to be a farmer in that. I mean, what do you do? I mean, the Hurricane Matthew that crashed into Haiti 2.5 weeks ago destroyed 90% or 100% of the crops across that southwest peninsula where it came in. I mean, people literally have nothing to eat.
And it means that they must migrate, I suppose.
Well, this is the kind of migratory pressure we're seeing. The academic research say on what happened in Syria is pretty clear now. One of the biggest factors leading to the civil war, and hence the, along with our witless plan to invade Iraq, was the fact that there was the deepest drought in the history of what we used to call the Fertile Crescent. And a million farmers were driven off their land and into cities, and it just overwhelmed what was already a not very useful government there in Syria. And, now we see the just endless waves of misery that spread out from it. That's what happens.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:57. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Wednesday, October 26th, 5 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy is a documentary film featuring Greg Palast and Lenny Bad Penny as they look into Operation Crosscheck, analyze the data, and find some of the 7.2 million Americans whose votes are threatened this November.
This is Greg Palast, Rolling Stone investigative reporter. I go on the hunt for the big fix that could steal the 2016 election, and I hunt down the billionaires behind the scam.
Again, that's the best democracy money can buy. Wednesday, October 26th, 5 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Rents Tents Development. Who does the City Council represent? On Friday, October 21st at Revolution Hall in Portland. Rents Tents and Development is an election debate featuring candidates for Portland City Commissioner Chloe Udaly and Steve Novick. This event will focus on how housing intersects with other social justice causes and the candidates' vision of how we can take local action to change housing policy in our city. Again, that's Rents Tents Development. Who does City Council represent on Friday, October 21st at Revolution Hall, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us an Indian first then?
Hello out there, Portland. How's it going? I am back. Back in this fabulous city, back on the best coast, the West Coast, here in Portland. I'm your host, Jack Malmstrom. Hello.